Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Flint, Michigan, earned a BS in economics from the University of Michigan and an MBA from Michigan State. In 1988, he joined Lear Corporation and held a series of management and divisional positions of ever-increasing levels. Since 2018, he's been the president, CEO of Lear Corporation, which is a global automotive technology leader in seating and e-systems. His name? Ray Scott. And we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Ray Scott, the Ray Scott. Since 2018, he's been the president and CEO of Lear Corporation. Ray, an honor to have you.
It's an honor to be here, Jack. Thank you.
Let's go back to Flint, Michigan. Your childhood, your mom and your dad.
Yeah, wow. I couldn't be more proud growing up in Flint. And, you know, Flint's been through a lot, you know, particularly over the last 20, 30 years. And, you know, I was born in 1965 in Flint, Michigan. So saw a lot of ups and downs, you know, in the 70s, given the manufacturing environment, Buick, Chevrolet, you know, AC, Fisher, Body, there was a lot going on. Middle class was doing extremely well. People generally were doing extremely well. We, you know, had a lot of jobs, a lot of prosperity around the automotive industry. And everything was interconnected, too, within Flint. There wasn't, you know, directly impacted by the auto industry, or indirectly you were impacted by the auto industry. So, you know, in the late 70s, with the recession, the national recession, Flint was hit at a multiple level, you know, a real decline in manufacturing jobs, good paying jobs. And so you saw a lot of unemployment. So what I think about when I think about my time in Flint, you know, there's a lot of prosperity, a lot of good times, a lot of family, a lot of loyalty, hardworking people. And then you go through the downturn and you learn how to work harder, you know, how to think about taking on challenges, how to really come together as a community, really, you know, build a bond that was very unique. And so, you know, I would never trade my experiences. I've seen both sides of what is very good environment in Flint, and then obviously a downturn in Flint that really drove a lot of, you know, hard workers, a lot of ways to think about things, so a lot of ways to come together. And the other thing that I'm very appreciative about is my time in Flint is, you know, my parents, although we didn't have a lot of money, always managed to send me to a Catholic school. And I didn't reflect on that till later on in life and appreciate that as much as I do today. But, you know, a lot of the discipline, a lot of the things I learned about my faith, a lot of the focus I have on family and community was really with my education, both my lower education and high school. I went to Flint Powers. And there's another great advantage of going to a Catholic school. I met my wife, and so we started dating in high school at the age of 16, and so we continued our relationship all the way through college, and then we got married. So not only did I have a great education, a great experience, you know, really reinforced who I am as a person, but, you know, even better, met a big part of my life in a person that has been very supportive in our success as we've moved out of Flint and around the world.
In 1988, you go to work for this company called Lear Corporation. How and why?
It was a job that paid money. And, you know, it's interesting now as I reflect on Lear Corporation, and Lear's been through a lot, you know. What's interesting, here we are sitting in Detroit. Lear, in 1917, was founded American Metal Products 1917. I mean, so there's over 100 years old. And, you know, it was acquired, American Metal Products was acquired in 1966. And then the time I joined Lear, they were going through a leverage buyout. Management was buying the automotive group of Lear Siegler and taking it private. And so, you know, I didn't really have an appreciation for what I was learning at such an early age, but having the opportunity at Lear through an LBO, seeing how individuals that put their own money into a company run a company, you know, for cost, operational excellence, making sure you're efficient. It was all focused around how we can make sure we're going to be successful. And you'll hear me talk about it a lot, but I think that survival mentality has been a part of, you know, my culture, my beliefs, since growing up in Flint to really working at Lear. So I learned it, you know, in Lear at a very early age that you're only as good as your performance and how you're performing. And so in 1994, I got to witness us go public in Lear Corporation. And so I've seen a lot. I've been able to really appreciate going through different types of environments in a company that's maturing extremely fast.
The first job you ever had was as a sales coordinator. What did you earn, and what does a sales coordinator do?
Well, I think, you know, back then I was lucky to have a title. It was really, I was managing bills of material. You want to talk about a tedious job. My job was to check the engineering drawings against the actual material on hand and make sure the quantities were right, that we had the right supply chain, that we're, you know, quoting to our customers the right percentages as far as increases in material and those type of things. So I'll tell you, it was more of a grunt job, but I learned quite a bit. And I don't think my salary at the time was hardly anything, but it was, like I said, about survival, having a job. And I remember the times when I think about it, going through an LBO and what that really taught me was there's times we couldn't make payroll. I mean, the company couldn't make payroll. And I say that to a younger generation today that, you know, every 2 weeks they're getting their check. And I remember, and I didn't at the time think of it as anything but a frustrating, you know, time that I couldn't get paid. But it was all part of us in a survival mode for the company. And so, you know, cutting corners, cutting costs, getting paid, we're all part of that early development as a company as we are maturing and then eventually going public.
We're talking to Ray Scott, and he's the leader, the servant leader of Lear Corporation, 2025, $22.8 billion with a B, dollars in revenue. That's a lot of zeros. 174,000 employees, 255 facilities, 37 countries. He runs the United Nations. When we come back, we'll ask him about that. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Ray Scott. Ray, since 2018, you've led this $22 billion company, 37 countries, 174,000 people, a United Nations, a melting pot of the world. How do you do it?
Yeah. Well, the short answer is I surround myself with incredibly talented people that help me every single day in making decisions and thinking about where we need to position the company, not just for today, but 5, 10, 15 years from now. And so, you know, I think that's something that is absolutely essential, is that there is no one individual. It is a team. It takes a team. And we have an incredibly talented team around the world. And so I couldn't be more proud of the people that I surround myself with. And they're the ones that help me every day. And they're the ones that really run the company and drive the company every single day long term.
Let's go back to 2005 to 2007. You were GM Division President, U.S. And you and your team won the first total interior contract from General Motors Corporation. Talk about that.
Yeah, One, I couldn't, like I said, that was one heck of an accomplishment. And again, I'll reinforce the fact that we had an incredible team that pulled that together from a total interior perspective. But I also think, and I reflect on that, that is one singular opportunity in a lot that I've been given at Lear Corporation. I think Lear, with how fast we're growing, you're put into positions at a very young age to really drive, you know, productivity and growth and put yourself in a position that you can't fail. And that was one example. I have a number of examples throughout Lear, you know, living overseas, running different operations in Sweden or Germany or France, dealing with different OEMs around the world, learning to adapt and really drive changes as a leader have been instrumental in positioning me for this role today. And I think as you continue to grow, you know, taking on challenges, you know, that others quite candidly aren't interested in, and putting yourself in those positions where you could fail, but you could also be very successful. I think of that as one stepping stone on a lot of different challenges that Lear has offered me and others to really grow as a leader and develop as a leader long term.
I served the automotive industry for 26 years with an IT consulting business. We were a vendor when I started. And then the big three decided we got to have some partners. So this deal you got for the luxury cars in 2005, you went from an us and a them to a we. Both sides had to change. Mm-hmm. How did those two disparate families of people come together?
Well, again, it's the people you bring together. You know, I always say this. It's you need people in the room that will tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. And, you know, I had to bring individuals in that had a completely different background, a different set of experiences and capabilities and knowledge to really help us get to where we were going. And that's not easy. A lot of times relying on people that you have a lot of trust with or you're very familiar with is the easy option. But going out and bringing in different individuals that could disrupt a team or be a little bit more difficult to bring an individual into a team in a culture that you absolutely have to fit is a little bit more work, but it's the right thing to do when you're trying to take on challenges or opportunities, in this case, that are very unique. And so I find myself always going back to the people and making sure you're surrounding yourself with people that can really take you to where you need to go.
We've been watching this World Cup. It's been fabulous.
Yeah, it has.
The biggest thing, I think, for Americans is all of these people from other countries have come and basically said, guys, this is unbelievable what you have. You like us. You've got the ranch dressing.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
It's the joy. What has that taught you, Ray?
Well, the way I look at it, and I'm fortunate to travel the world. And, you know, I get to see different cultures, experience different beliefs, understand how people think, how people are motivated, how you know, they're inspired. And you can't take things for granted. You know, I think in some cases, you know, you get too comfortable and you just take ranch dressing for granted or whatever it is. But I don't want to simplify it. But, you know, you always
barbecue.
Have to. Yeah, barbecue or the luxury of air conditioning. It, you know, there's a lot that when I travel that I talk to my family about often is that you can't take things for granted. And I think in some cases when you get to experience the luxuries and the style of living and the things that we have here, you can take them for granted. And I just remind people that, you know, from my experiences, don't ever take it for granted. It is a very special country, a very special culture, very special in what we've done. But you can lose it very quickly, too. And that goes not just for what we experience here in the U.S., but at a company or family setting, both professionally and personally. And so, you know, you just have to kind of be on that comfortable edge where, yeah, it is nice, but don't ever take it for granted.
Lear Corporation is a global automotive technology leader in seating and e-systems. It's making every drive better by delivering intelligent in-vehicle experiences for customers around the world. If you want to learn more, www.lear.com. We're talking to Ray Scott. When we come back, we're going to go back to October 4th, 2017. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula. We're with Ray Scott, CEO of Lear Corporation, www.lear.com. Ray, October 4th, 2017, Lear breaks ground for a new manufacturing plant in your hometown, Flint, Michigan. What was that like?
Well, it's vivid memories right now coming back. It was very emotional. And I remember the groundbreaking day and the celebration and the work that the teams had done to get the facility ready. But if I go back, it was, you know, we were looking at locations all over, you know, in different areas outside of Flint. And I kept telling the team, no, you don't get it. Or this plant is going to be in Flint. It's going to be in Flint. It was, I think, a very important part in a platform that I could drive a decision that I thought was the right decision. And you know what's really interesting about that, we put the facility on the location that used to be where Buick City was, the administration office. And I remember the big white building. I used to work at Buick City in the summer times on the assembly line. And so I remember you know, the work that I used to do at the unit flow through terminal of just packaging up trucks and product that went over to Buick City. And then I worked a truck and bus on the assembly line, putting together chassis for one summer. So I had a lot of fond memories of manufacturing in Flint. So to see Buick City down, but to still have that land and that location available was absolutely key. And, you know, when we put that facility up and what I didn't expect, we had over, you know, there's probably 600 openings, 700 openings for jobs that we were going to supply in Flint. There was 4,000 applicants that came out to you know, interview for a job at that manufacturing facility, and I didn't expect that. And then what I think gets somewhat overlooked is the quality of workers and the quality of the work that's being done every single day at that plant, I couldn't be more proud of. It is one of our benchmarks when we think about, you know, employee relationships, job satisfaction, relationships with our workers in the facility. We continue to add new technology, innovation for job satisfaction long term. And so, you know, it was a very emotional day when you bring back that specific day, but there was a lot of work that went into that before. There's decisions that were made that, you know, fortunately, because of my position, I could make sure I knew exactly where we're going. But to be on that site, that location, is very special to me personally.
Speaking of quality work, quality workers, define for us Lear's culture.
Well, you know, when we think about Lear, and I've been at Lear a long time, and I've seen our culture grow, change, develop, and you know, the way we message it is being inventive, being inclusive, and getting results the right way. You know, I think of Lear, and I say this all the time, and I think of it as a family. You know, we truly. When things get tough or there's challenges that we have, we lean on each other. And since my time as a CEO, we've come across some major industry challenges. You know, going back to the first major strike, obviously going through COVID, what we went through with the chip crisis, labor economics, material economics, you know, what we're experiencing with tariff, trade, the geopolitical situation with the different wars, the supply chain impacts. What I find is that our culture just steps up to the challenges and they really trust each other and they lean on each other and they get the job done. There's so many stories that I have that I could sit here and talk about through all the challenges we've seen over the last 7 years that are remarkable, truly remarkable. You know, writing the playbook for the COVID situation, that was our team, and you know, really with my understanding of like we got to have a playbook that we go to where we can help others out, and not just in our own facilities, but that we can give to others that don't have the knowledge that we had. You know, we have 4 facilities, you know, right in China that were experiencing COVID initially. And so obviously as things were spreading around the world, we had experiences, we had knowledge. That playbook was downloaded over 45,000 times by municipalities, by grocery stores, by, you know, it wasn't just our industry. People used it to guide themselves through a very tough time. And I think that's one of the things, you know, that I look back on and I couldn't be more proud of, is that our team worked on that. It was dynamic. I struggled with putting it out at first because I didn't want there to be, you know, a potential issue with, hey, this didn't work or that didn't work or criticism on we knew everything. We didn't. We just wanted to publish what we did know and what was working and what were the best procedures. What was the best, you know, setup in a manufacturing plant to protect your people? And that's exactly what we did. And we have story after story. And when I think about the culture, Jack, I think about that particular scenario. I think that that's how we handle things. We step up, we do the right things, and we make sure we're doing everything to either give our employees, you know, the tools that they need to do their job, or we're protecting them. And so it is a people business for sure.
Every culture emanates from the leader. Every entity has a culture, a school, a sports team, an organization, a radio station, an archdiocese has a culture. So your culture is be inclusive, be inventive, get results the right way. You've got 174,000 people, 37 countries. Ray, how do you propagate the culture to all 174,000 people?
So, Jack, what I spend my time on, I mean, obviously strategy, where the company is going, you know, running the business, but is that point. And you have to work at it. You have to be consistent. You have to communicate. You have to talk. You have to share in successes. When things are happening, when you look at the culture that would drove incredible results and celebrate those successes. Because I say this all the time to our employees around the world. Culture is strong or weak as one person. In culture, I can set, here's the mantra, here's the words, and I can walk the talk, but you can have one plant manager that isn't following or towing the line, and that sets a terrible culture within that facility. You can have an individual and a program team. You can have an individual in a particular region. So what we talk about and what we do is follow up. There's got to be consequences to you know, particular actions or steps that are taken, but there's got to be recognition. So I enforce, and we just had a celebration the other day. We celebrated 200 employees for some incredible, you know, awards or progress or actions that they did in the company. And it doesn't have to be just business related. It could be on a personal level. You know, we focus a lot on giving back in the communities where we live and work. And that started long before I came to Lear, and the belief that you have an obligation to give back. And I think the more that you can impress on individuals through what you're doing, the actions you're taking, you know, like I say, walk the talk. But you also have to have a firm fist and have consequences when people aren't, you know, building the type of culture we want in the company. But it's something that we work on every single day, Jack, every single day, because it can go quickly.
You've grown organically, but you've also grown through acquisition over the years. United Technologies Automotive in 99, mm-hmm. Guilford Mills, Eagle Ottawa, mm-hmm. Occasions, Grupo Antonin. The easy part is the contract and the numbers. The much harder part, as you know, Ray, is bringing these two disparate families together.
Yeah.
In many cases, they used to compete against each other. How the heck do you bring two families and create one?
Well, we have been and have done a nice job of tuck-in acquisitions, and it's something you learn along the journey. There's no question about it. I think there's some things we've done right in the past, and there's things we've absolutely done wrong that we've learned from. And I think to the point that you just made, Jack, is, you know, you can look at a balance sheet, you can look at the numbers, you can look at the synergies, you can look at how you can scale things more appropriately, you can look at the customer profile. But the culture of the company that you're acquiring or that you're bringing in is absolutely as important, if not more important, and the fit and how that's going to work. And so every acquisition is slightly different. They're all different. And I think you have to be flexible in how you approach it. Some of them are a little bit more aggressive in how you might restructure or blend the organizations together. A lot of them are a little bit more open and flexible, where you let the organization run and continue to run, the way they're running to best fit the company's needs long term. And so it's not easy, but I think that balance that you mentioned is very important. You just don't look at the balance sheet. You have to look at the people. You have to look at the culture, because that is as big, if not bigger, than the balance sheet when you think about long-term fit.
We're talking to Ray Scott. If you want to learn more, www.lear.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about the biggest contract Lear has ever won back in February of this year. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Rasula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, "Work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love, stay humble."
The great Ernie Harwell.
"My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God."
And the voices of our generation.
"I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life, and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis."
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
"My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan."
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohom. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Ray Scott. He's been with Lear since 1988. I think that's 37 years.
That's a long
He's
time.
Been the leader, servant leader, since 2018. All right, in February, it was announced that GM gave you the contract to supply complete seats for pickup trucks and SUVs at their Orion assembly plant starting in 2027.
Well, there's two announcements. I'll add to that one, Jack. There's that announcement.
Be careful what you pray for, huh?
Yeah. Well, and there's one we can't name the OEM at this time, but it was a significant award that was conquested two seat plants in addition to that announcement with the Orion facility. And I think first of all, I couldn't be more proud of the team. It was a great accomplishment, but a lot of hard work. And you mentioned the acquisitions and the companies we've been targeting. We've really been targeting companies that change the trajectory of our technology innovation in our manufacturing plants. this digital transformation, AI transformation, the automation transformation is, I believe, essential to our success. We believe that we've built a defensible moat that, you know, creates a competitive advantage for us, not just today, but long term. And I believe that, you know, the scarcity around human capital will continue to become an issue for manufacturing. Manufacturing jobs continue to increase, so there's going to be a shortage of workers. And so what we've done is we've done a lot with technology innovation, and those two particular awards were focused on innovation around automation and digital transformation and AI. And that's how we won those particular awards. And what's exciting about it is that, you know, when I walk through the plants, and I'm walking through the plants right now, and we have an innovation center I was just at yesterday that's driving the next generation of technology. These companies that we've acquired, we are making our own capital, and I'll call it manufacturing integration within the manufacturing plant, where historically we would acquire 80% of our capital or more. We're now manufacturing 80% of our own capital. We're doing it at a much more efficient cost, much more efficient product use, much more efficient throughput, job satisfaction. But the point I want to mention is that I've been, and I have the opportunity to see the technology throughout the world. And I walk through the facilities, what I gain knowledge on is obviously the quality improvements, the efficiency improvements, the throughput, the working capital improvements, but the job satisfaction. The employees. I mean, they are so happy. There's some tedious jobs that are, you know, are tough jobs that we're making the job much more sophisticated, engineered in a way that's much easier and much more satisfying. So an employee that comes in and has an 8-hour job that has been very, difficult, we're making it much simpler. And so we're seeing that progression. And those two facilities, and one's going to be right here in our backyard, that will be up and running by the end of this year. And that will be the benchmark for some of the technology innovation that we're putting in place. And so it's exciting. It was a great announcement. We continue. We're on the cusp right now. We're going to have another announcement. I'm trying to think of earnings calls before this or after, but that we're going to be announcing good business wins, too. That will continue the trajectory of what I just talked about.
Matt Elliott, up until a year ago, was president of Bank of America, Michigan. Great guy. He's now on the circuit speaking. And one thing he says is AI is taking away tasks, but not necessarily your job. So, okay. You're famous for some Scottisms. Get uncomfortable.
Yeah. We're just talking a little bit too. As I reflect on my career, and I say this all the time, there's some tough jobs, tough things I've done. Where, like living in Sweden, my wife retired from her job. She was doing well. We had two kids. I remember staring at the ceiling, thinking, "Boy, I just messed up. I messed up my life. What am I doing here?" You know, and it was uncomfortable. It was very uncomfortable. But the ability to push through that, work hard, learn through it, you know, understand how to inspire and lead in a different country, in the moment, seemed like the worst decision I ever made in my life. It was uncomfortable. 5 years later, I realized it was probably the most important decision I made professionally. And it was only, 5 years later that I reflected on it and realized how important that was. And I think through all the things that we were talking about, they're uncomfortable.
Number two, invite real input from your team.
Yeah, I think too many times we surround ourselves with people that tell you what you want to hear just because it's more comfortable. No one likes to really be brutally honest, but you need that. You really need that. And what I've found is that you find a room where people are talking candidly and have the right to talk and open it up so people are giving you good, positive feedback on what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. It's extremely helpful.
Another one. Take on challenges that others won't.
Well, I think those are tied together. You know, like I said, there's a lot of times I raise my hand where I looked around and was wondering why no one else was volunteering and thinking, what am I doing? And those are the ones, those are the times. And I say this too, Jack, it's not just professionally, it's personally. There's a lot of things that you're uncomfortable in your personal life that you don't want to do. You just don't want to do them. But those are the things you have to do. And you have to push through them. And those are the things you'll learn from.
Speaking of a person who takes on challenges that others won't, we have a mutual friend, Father Tim McCabe, a Jesuit. He had a daughter out of wedlock. He became the Midwest director of the Jesuit Volunteer Corps. Then he decides to become a Jesuit priest. And since 2015, he's been executive director of the Pope Francis Center that you guys have been very involved with.
Yeah. You find people in your life that just totally inspire you. Father Tim is the person that really inspires me. Unfortunately, he's a guy I can't say no to either. So anything he asks for, when you have an individual like Father Tim that has aspirations and a goal to solve chronic homelessness in the city of Detroit, and he's worked so hard to figure out a path to do that, and he works every single day, harder than I can even imagine someone working, you have to be inspired. And so, yeah, I love Father Tim. Like I said, it's hard for me to say no to him because he's a human being that every single day wakes up and tries to do the right thing for other human beings.
One other person that can never say no to Jesus, in my opinion, a superstar, Kathleen McCann.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's everywhere.
She goes to Mass every morning all over the world.
Yeah. She is equally as inspiring and someone that I think there's duplicates of her. I don't know how she's in so many places at so many times. I'm not joking. I mean, she's in everything that I attend, and I know she's in other events where my wife works closely with her. And so, yeah, we've gained a lot of appreciation for her, and she's doing an incredible job too.
As our time winds down, what advice do you give to our young listeners tonight?
Well, I think, work hard. You know, it's not like it's a tough explanation of what's important. Work hard in what you're doing professionally. Work hard in what you're doing personally. You know, you're gonna be challenged and push through them. There's no easy answers, and just things will work out. Have patience. It's not an easy path. I think sometimes younger generation might be a little bit too impatient, and I think you have to have patience.
Mr. Scott, I admire you. You are a servant leader. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Jack. It's great to be here.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. Make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoke.